Tibetan Sage by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 8. Lobsang, come on, it's lesson time. My mind went back to another lesson time. It was at the Patala. I had been away a few days with the Lama Mingyar Dondup, and then when we returned to the Patala, he said, "Well, lessons will have just started for this afternoon. You'd better go into the class now." I nodded somewhat despondently and walked into the classroom. The Lama teacher looked up, and then an expression of rage came to his face. He pointed his finger at me and he shouted, "Out! Out! I won't have you in my class!" So there was nothing else for it. I turned around and walked out. Some of the other cellas tittered a bit, and the Lama teacher descended upon them with his cane flailing everywhere. I went out into what we would call our playground and idly scuffed at the dirt. The Lama Mingyar Dondup turned a corner and saw me, and he came across to me and said, "I thought you had gone into class." "I did, sir," I replied, "but the teacher was in a rage with me, and he ordered me out and said that there would be no more room in his classes for me." "Oh, did he?" said my guide. "Come along, we will go and see what it's all about together." We walked side by side along the corridor. The corridor floor was quite slippery with melted butter, which had dripped from our butter oil lamps, and the melted butter had fallen to the floor and hardened with the cold, and the wretched place was sometimes like a skating rink. But we walked along together to the classroom, and we entered. The Lama teacher was in a furious rage, lashing out at boys at random. When he saw the Lama Mingyar Dondup, he turned very pale indeed. It gave him a nasty shock, and he went back to his podium. "What is the trouble here?" asked the Lama Mingyar Dondup. "There's no trouble here except that that boy," pointing at me, "always disturbs the class. We don't know if he's going to be in the class or out of the class, and I'm not having a boy like that to teach." "Oh, so it's like that, eh? This boy, Lobsang Rampa, is under special orders from the Great 13th, and you will obey those orders, just as I do. Come with me. We will go and see the Great 13th now." The Lama Mingyar Dondup turned and walked out of the room, with the Lama teacher following him meekly, still clutching his stick. "My," said a boy, "I wonder what's going to happen now. I thought he was going mad. He lashed out at us all, and you can see we've got bruise marks on our faces. I wonder what's going to happen now." He hadn't long to wait, because quite soon the Lama Mingyar Dondup appeared, and in his wake there followed a fairly young, studious-looking Lama. The Lama Mingyar Dondup solemnly introduced him to us, and he said, "He will be your teacher from now on, and I want to see a great improvement in behavior and in the work that you do." He turned to the new teacher and said, "Lobsang Rampa is under special orders. Sometimes he will be away from this class for days. You will do your best to help him catch up on those missing days. The two lamas gravely bowed to each other, and the lama Mingyar Dhanda then left. I could not understand why that memory had come up all of a sudden, but hey, Lobsang, you haven't heard a word I've said, have you? No, sir. I was thinking of that time when I could not be accepted into a class, and I was just wondering how such a lama could become a teacher as well. Oh, well, you get good people and you get bad people, and I suppose this time we got a bad one. But never mind, everything is settled. We could say now that I am your keeper. I don't know if I have to have a lead or a collar for you or what, but I am your keeper, and I say what happens to you, no other teacher can say. He smiled at me as I broke into a really broad smile. I could learn with the Lama Mingyar Dhanda. He did not stop at the regulation stuff, but he went on to tell us things about the great outer world, which he had traveled so much. Well, Lobsang, we'd better start at a fairly elementary stage, because you will have to teach people in the great outer world. And although you probably know all the first part, which I'm going to tell you, yet repetition won't hurt you a bit. It might even drive the knowledge in another inch or two. The way he said it was a compliment, and I resolved anew to be a credit to him. Whether I have succeeded or failed, only time will tell when we get back to Patra. We will imagine a living body. The person lies down and goes to sleep, and then his astral form will come out of that body and will travel to some place. And if the sleeper is fairly unevolved, he will wake up thinking he has had a dream and nothing more. But when we get a trained person, that person can apparently be soundly asleep, while, all the time, he is doing controlled astral travel, and is still aware of what is happening near his physical body. He will get out of the physical body and travel to where he wants to go, wherever he has been directed to go. You can travel to anywhere on the world by astral travel, and if you train yourself, you can remember every single thing that happened when you return to your flesh body. When a person dies, it is because the astral person wants to get rid of the flesh body. Perhaps the flesh body is disabled and will not function properly, or perhaps the flesh body has learned everything that he needed to learn in that particular incarnation, because people come back to Earth time after time until their lessons are learned. You and I are different, because we are from beyond the astral. We are from Patra, with which we will deal with a little later. When the astral form is completely free from the physical body, and the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl be shattered, then the entity who was in that body is free to move about, free to do more or less as he wants to do. And then, after a time, he gets tired of us, well, running wild, and he consults a special branch of the government whose sole task it is to advise astral people as to what would be best for them, Should they stay in the astral and learn a bit more? Or should they go back to the earth in different circumstances so that they can learn the hard way? You see, when people are in the over-self stage, oh, that's a long way from you just yet, Lobsang, then they cannot experience pain, and people learn more quickly by pain than they do by kindness. So perhaps it will be mapped out that this person shall go back to earth with an urge to murder. He will be born to parents who are most likely to give him the opportunity of murdering someone. Now, his task is to fight against his inbuilt desire to murder, and if he gets through life without killing another person, then that life will have been a complete success. He's learning to control himself, and in that case, he will be able to have a rest in the astral. And then, once again, he will approach the committee of advisors to see what next they need him to do. He may be given an inclination to be a great missionary teaching the wrong things. Well, again, he is born to parents who can give him the opportunity of being a missionary. And then it all depends upon how satisfactory he is in that work. And if he realizes that he is teaching the wrong things, then he might make a change and gather much benefit from it. He might, for instance, realize that there can't be a virgin birth unless the offspring be female. Under certain circumstances, women can produce children without the no doubt pleasurable aid of a man, but on every occasion, the child so born will be a female. If she grows up and marries and has a child, then the child may be female or may be a weak, sickly male. You never get a dominant person born without the aid of a man. In the astral, people can see their mistakes and perhaps do something to overcome the bad they've done to other people. Did you know, Lobsang, that every person on earth has had to live through the whole of the zodiac and all the quadrants of the zodiac as well, because the astrological makeup of a person has a very great bearing on how he progresses and his station in life. For example, an Aries person might come and be a very successful butcher, but if his parents are of high enough status, he might become a very successful surgeon. Not much difference between them, you know. I am told that a pig and a human taste much the same. Not that I've ever tried it or intend to try it. I thought of this for a moment or two, and then I said, Master, does this mean that we have to live through each sign of the zodiac, Mars, Venus, and all the others, and then live through the same astrological sun sign with all the different quadrants? Well, yes, of course it does. The difference that is made by each quadrant is almost unbelievable, because if we get a strong sun sign, then the first part of the quadrant will contain not only the sun sign, but also strong indications from the sign before. Whereas in the center of the quadrants, The sun sign will be the predominant influence, and then as one progresses through that sign, as we come to the last part of the quadrant, then the indications are very strong for the next sign on the chart. I am telling you all this because you may have to explain things like it to people in the future, so every person lives through every part of the zodiac, not necessarily in the same order, but in that order which enables them to profit the most from the things that have to be learned. I keep being reminded, Master, that I am going to have quite a hard life with much suffering, etc. Well, why does there have to be so much suffering? The Lama, Mingyur Dandup, looked down at his feet for a moment or two and then said, "You have a very great task to do, a noble task, and you will find that people who are not themselves noble will try to prevent you from having any success, and they will stoop to any sort of trick to prevent you from achieving success. You see, people get jealous. People make something, write something, draw something, which is acknowledged to be far better than a book or drawing, which was the undisputed leader before your effort. Now, I know I sound all mixed up on that, but that's just how it is. You will have to count on a terrific amount of jealousy, and you poor soul, you'll have a lot of trouble caused by women, not through your sexual activities with them, but someone's wife will show friendship to you, and her husband, not understanding, will be insanely jealous. And then other women will be jealous because they smiled at you and you didn't smile back. Oh, Lobsang, beware of women. I have all my life, and I feel the better for it." I sat in black, gloomy silence, thinking over my terrible fate, and the Lama said, "Cheer up. I know that you know nothing at all about women, but soon you will have an opportunity to examine their bodies inside and out, because when you leave here to go to Chongqing in a few years, you will see dead bodies, male and female, in the dissecting rooms. At first you will find that your stomach will heave quite a bit, but no matter, a day or two and you will be quite used to it, and from the record of probabilities you are going to be a very good doctor indeed. You can be a good surgeon because, well, I must say, you are a bit ruthless, and one has to be ruthless to be a good surgeon. So, when we get out of this cell or cage or cave, call it what you will, you will soon go to another where you will have a bit of practice with surgical instruments, and where you can learn things through the universal language. And, of course, I stand ready to help you in any way possible." "Master, you have mentioned Patra several times within the last few days, but I have never heard of the word before, and I'm sure that not too many people in the Potala or Shakpori make much use of the word." "Well, there's no point in mentioning a thing which is far, far beyond the average person's attainment. Patra is the heavenly field of the heavenly fields. All people, when they leave the earth, go to the astral world. It actually is a world, as you should have seen through your astral travels. It is a world just like this earth in many ways, but there are many more pleasant facets to it. You can mix with people, you can read, you can talk, and you can go to meetings and hear how others are getting on. Why did this person fail, and why did that person succeed? But from the astral, people return to Earth or to some other planet in order to carry out another and more successful life. But there is a rare, rare planet called Patra. It is the heaven of heavens. Only the very best souls go there. Only those who have done the most good. For example, Leonardo da Vinci is there working on projects which will help other Earths. Socrates is there. Aristotle and many of that type are there. You won't find any fakes there. That excludes one quite definitely. And it is already planned that you are going to Patra at the end of this life. You are going there because, for several lives, you have had hardship after hardship, and you have successfully surmounted them. And the task you're doing now? Well, anyone else would say it was an impossible task. But you will succeed, and you will stay on Patra for quite a time. There is no friction there, no fights, no starvation or cruelty. Will cats be permitted on Patra, Master? Oh, my goodness, yes, of course they will. Cats have souls just the same as people. There are a lot of ignoramuses who think that this thing on four legs is just a dumb animal, almost without feeling, and certainly without intelligence, and definitely without a soul. That is not true. Cats have souls. Cats can progress. They can progress through the world of the astral and read about Patra. In Patra, they can be with the people they loved on Earth, or perhaps on some other planet. Oh yes, Lobsang, you must make it quite clear to people that cats are people. They are individuals. They are highly evolved little people who have been put on Earth for a special purpose. So you should treat cats with great respect, as I know you do. Let's take a walk around, because my legs are getting stiff and I think I'm ready for a bit of a walk to try and loosen them up. So come on, stir those lazy legs of yours, and we will walk around and see some other things that you haven't seen before. Master, I called out to the Lama Mingyar Dondup, who was quite a way ahead of me now. He stopped to permit me to catch up with him, and then I went on. Master, you know this place well. You know it very well, and I thought it was a discovery. You've been teasing me, Master. He laughed and said, No, I haven't been teasing you, Lobsang. And the particular entrance we came in, well, that was a surprise. I certainly did not expect an entrance there, because there's nothing about it on the maps. And I am rather wondering why there should have been an entrance there. You agree with me that there is no sign of a rock deformation. I suppose it must have been because that old hermit was in charge of various supplies here, and he liked to have this entrance so close to his hermitage. But no, I wasn't teasing you. We shall have to find out how to get out tomorrow, because now my legs have healed so well, I can manage to climb down the mountain. I replied, "Well, you won't look very pretty climbing down the mountain with your robes in such tatters." "Oh, yes, I will. You and I are going to appear tomorrow in brand new robes, which are about 1,000,000 years old." Then, as an afterthought, he said, "And you are going to appear as a monk, not as a chela or an acolyte. From now on, you have to stay with me and go where I go and learn anything that I can tell you." He turned away, walked just a few steps, bowed to a door, and placed his hands in a certain position. Slowly, I saw a section of the wall slide aside in utter silence, no grating of rock upon rock. Utter silence, such silence as to make the whole thing uncanny. The lama gave me a little push between the shoulder blades and said, "Come on, this is some stuff you have to see. This is Patra. This is how Patra would appear to us. Of course, this globe is merely so that we can see what is going on in Patra at any time." He put his hand on my shoulder, and we walked a few yards until we came to a wall fitted with instruments and a great big screen, about 4 men high and 3 men wide. He said, "That is for any particular detailed investigation." The lights in the hall dimmed. Similarly, at the same time, the light from the globe which he had called Patra brightened. It was a sort of, pinkish gold color, and it gave one a wonderful feeling of warmness and the sensation that one was truly welcome. The lama pushed one of those button things again, and the haziness in the globe, or around the globe, disappeared like a mountain fog disappearing before the rays of the sun. I peered avidly. This was a wonderful world indeed. I seemed to be standing on a stone wall, and waves were beating mildly against the wall. Then, just to my right, I saw a ship coming in. I knew it was a ship, because I had seen pictures of them. But this ship came in and moored up against the wall just in front of me, and a lot of people got off, all looking pleased with themselves.
"Well, that's a happy-looking crowd, Master. What were they doing, anyway?"
"Oh, this is Patra. Here you can have any number of things for recreation. These people, I suppose, thought how nice it would be to take a leisurely trip over to the island. I expect they had tea there, and then they came back." This is several steps up from the astral world. People can only come here if they are, let us say, super people.
It often entails terrible suffering to get worthy of this place, and when one gets here and sees what it is, and sees the caliber of the people, then it is obvious that the place is worth all the suffering. Here we can travel by thought. We are on this planet, and we want to see a certain person. Well, we think about him. We think about him hard, and if he is willing to see us, we suddenly lift off the ground and rise up in the air and travel swiftly to our wanted destination. We should get there and we should see the person we wanted to see standing outside his front door, ready to greet us. But, Master, what sort of people come here? How do they get here? And would you call them prisoners? Presumably they can't get away from this place. Oh, definitely, definitely this is not a prison. This is a place of advancement. Only good people can come here. Those who have made supreme sacrifices can come. Those who have done their very best to help their fellow men and women. Normally, we should go from the flesh body to the astral body. Do you see that here no one has a silver cord? No one has a golden bowl vapor around his or her head? They don't need it here, because everyone is the same. We have all manner of good people here. Socrates, Aristotle, Leonardo da Vinci, and others like that. Here they lose what little faults they had, because to keep them on earth they had to adopt a fault. They were of such a high vibration that they just could not stay on earth without having some sort of fault. So, before Mendelssohn or someone else could get down to earth, he had to have a fault inbred for that one particular life. So when he died and got to the astral world, then the fault departed and the entity departed also. I mentioned Mendelssohn, the musician. He would arrive on the astral plane, and it would be like a policeman there to take away the silver cord and the golden bowl and send him along to Patra. On Patra, he would meet friends and acquaintances, and they would be able to discuss their past lives and carry out experiments which they had long wanted to do. Well, Master, what do they do about food here? There doesn't seem to be food, boxes of food, on this place which I assume is a dock. No, you won't find much food on this world. People don't need it. They pick up all their bodily and mental energy by a system of osmosis. That is, they absorb the energy given out by the light of Patra. If they want to eat for pleasure, of course, or drink for pleasure, then they are quite able to do so, except they cannot gourmandize, and they cannot have those spiritus liquors which rot a person's brain. Such drinks are very, very bad, you know, and they can hold up a person's development for several lives. Now, let's take a fleeting glance through the place. There is no time here, so it is useless for you to ask a person how long he has lived here, because he will just look at you blankly and think you are someone not at all aware of the conditions. People never get used to Patra. They never get tired of it. There is always something fresh to do, fresh people to meet, but you cannot meet an enemy. Let us get up in the air and look down on this little fishing village. But I thought you said people did not need to eat, Master, so why should they want a fishing village? Well, they are not catching fish in the ordinary meaning of the word. They're catching fish to see how they can be improved, to give them better senses. On Earth, you know, the fish are really stupid, and they deserve to get caught. But here, they are caught in nets and kept in water all the time we have them, and they are treated kindly, and there is no resentment from them. They realize that we are trying to do good for the whole species. Similarly, with animals, none of them are afraid of mankind on this world. They are friends instead. But let's just take a darting visit to various places, because soon we must be leaving here and going back to the Patala. Suddenly, I felt myself rising up into the air, and my sight seemed to be going. I suddenly got a splitting headache, and to tell the honest truth about it, I thought I was dying. The Lama Mingyar Dondup grabbed me and put his hands over my eyes. He said, "I am so sorry, Lobsang. I forgot you had not been treated for fourth dimension sight. We shall have to go down on the surface again for about half an hour." With that, I felt myself sinking, and then the welcome feeling of something solid beneath my feet. This is the fourth dimension world, and sometimes there are overtones of the fifth dimension. If we are showing a person Patra, then of course they have to have fourth dimensional vision, otherwise it is too much of a strain for them. The Lama had me lay back on a couch, and then he dropped things into my eyes. After several minutes, he put goggles on me, goggles which completely covered my eyes, and I said, "Oh, I can see now. This is wonderful." Before, things had been beautiful, extraordinarily beautiful, but now that I could see in the fourth dimension, the sights were so glorious that they just cannot be described in three-dimensional words. But it nearly wore my eyes out looking about, and then we rose up in the air again, and I just had not seen such beauty before. The men were of surpassing handsomeness, but the women, well, they were so beautiful that I felt somewhat strange stirrings inside, and of course women and I were strangers, because my mother had been a very strict mother indeed, and my sister, well, I had hardly seen her. We were kept rigidly apart because it had been ordained before my birth that I should enter the Lamasery. But the beauty, the absolute beauty, and the tranquility, it really defies description in a three-dimensional language. It's like trying to describe something on earth by a man born blind. How is he going to describe colors? He's born blind, so what does he know about colors? What is there to describe? He can say something about the shape and the weight, but the real beauty of the thing is absolutely beyond his comprehension. I am like that now. I have been treated to be able to see in the third dimension, the fourth dimension, and the fifth, so that when the time comes for me to leave this earth, I will go straight to Patra. So these people who say they have a course of instruction, and it is run by Dr. Rampa, by Ouija board, well, they are just crackpots. I tell you again, when I leave this world, I shall be completely beyond your reach. I shall be so far away from you that you cannot even comprehend it. It is quite impossible for me to describe Patra to you. It is like trying to tell a person who is born blind what a picture exhibition is like. You would get nowhere. But there are other things than pictures. Certain of the great people of old are here in this world of Patra, and they were working to try to help other worlds, two-dimensional worlds and three-dimensional worlds. Many of the so-called inventions on Earth are not inventions of the claimant. He or she just picked up the idea from something he or she saw in the astral world, and he came back to Earth with the memory of something that had to be invented. He got the broad ideas of how to do it, and, well, he constructed whatever it was that had to be constructed, and then he got it patented in his own name. The Lama Mingyar Dondop seemed to be extraordinarily well known on Patra. He could go anywhere and meet anyone, and he introduced me as an old friend that the others remembered. But I had forgotten because of the cloying clay of earth. They laughed with me and said, "Never mind, you will soon be coming over to us, and then you will remember everything." The Lama Mingyar Dondop was talking to a scientist, and he was saying, "Of course, the big trouble we have now is that people of different races have different outlooks. For instance, on some worlds, women are treated as the equal of men, but on other worlds, women are treated as common utensils or slaves, and when they get to a country which gives full freedom to women, they are unnerved and absolutely lost. We are working to try to find a way whereby all men and women of all countries will have a common viewpoint. They get a little way towards that in the astral world, but of course no one can come to Patra unless he realizes to the full the rights of everyone." He looked at me and smiled, and then he said, "I see you already recognize the rights of Friend Cat." I replied, "Yes, sir, I love them. I think they are the most wonderful animals anywhere." "You've got a marvelous reputation with animals, you know. And when you come back to us on Patra, A whole horde of cats are going to be there to meet you. You will have a living fur coat. He smiled because this big brown and white cat was climbing up my front to sit on my shoulder and resting his left paw on my head so as to steady himself, just as a human would. The Lama Mingyar Dandup said, "Well, Bob, we've got to say goodbye to you for the time being, but Lobsang will soon be returning home, and then you will have ample opportunity to sit on his shoulder." Bob, the cat, nodded solemnly and jumped off onto the table, and then he rubbed against me and purred and purred and purred. The Lama Mingyar Dandup said, "Let's move to the other side of Patra. There is the kingdom of flowers and plants, and the trees especially are waiting to see you again." No sooner had he finished speaking than we arrived at this wonderful spot where there were incredibly beautiful flowers and trees. I was scared stiff to move for fear of treading on the flowers. The Lama looked at me and fully understood my predicament. He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Lobsang, I should have told you. Here in the kingdom of flowers, you have to lift yourself about a foot above the actual ground. It is one of the abilities of the fourth dimension. You think the ground is a foot higher, and so as you walk, thinking the ground is a foot higher, then you actually walk a foot above the soil in which these plants live. We won't risk anything now. Instead, we'll just take a look around some other parts of this world. The machine men, for instance." Machines with souls, flowers with souls, cats with souls. "I suppose we'd better be getting back now, Lobsang," he said then, "because I have to show you a few things to prepare you in part for the life you're going to have to live. I wish I could travel with you and help you more, but my karma is that I am going to be killed by communists who are going to stab me through the back. But never mind that. Let's go back to our own world." End of chapter 8.